Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight, the Starlight Campbell Band.
Welcome to another special edition of the Supertone Show.
Neil Young and Crazy Horse, Farmer John. From Young's 18th studio album. I can't see through my glasses. I've got these very vocals. It's the country accent mind.
Whoa!
Oh, I tell you. I couldn't believe I did. I don't know where that came from. And I forgot they were playing for Farmer John at the beginning. So it was perfect.
I've been laughing all the way through that. You know, and it's such a fantastic song. But it makes me laugh even more because of that. Whoa! And
I know.
But I don't think they're actually drunk. I think they're actually...
Well, it feels like it, though.
It sounds like it. But it's such... It's such a, what's the word? It's such a free record.
Yeah.
It sounds like a bunch of musicians.
Having a good time.
Yeah. And that's what they're doing.
And you can see, you can picture in your mind's eye, right, Neil Young at the mic. Like, you know, he sways and he has that kind of loafish lumping around he does when he plays. And you can kind of imagine everyone else doing the same sort of dance, you know, whoa, and just...
Like, well, we saw them actually do this because they did this at the show that we saw. Because, I mean, this whole couple of shows that we've been doing is all about Neil Young, isn't
it? Yeah, I
know. And so his cool. guitar so playing, really, it. Principally.
Yeah.
You know, and his songwriting and all that sort of stuff. But I did cut you off at the beginning.
You did,
there.
Didn't
a bit
you?
Of confusion.
I hadn't quite finished, but it doesn't matter because it was like...
This is from Ragged Glory, the album.
Yeah, that's right. It was his 18th studio album called Ragged Glory and his 6th album with the band Crazy Horse, and it was released on the 9th of September in 1990 on Reprise Records. There you go.
And perhaps we should dedicate this show to Elliot Roberts, who was Neil Young's long-time manager, who died very recently, 76. And, you know, he was with Neil all the way through his career, really, for 50 years. And Neil Young actually gave him a beautiful plaudit. Now, for Neil Young to say anything beautiful about anything is a miracle. So he must have been really special, this guy. And as a manager... But, you know, I read the fact that he sort of used to ring him at least once a day, if not two or three times a day, and he'd get through problems and really, you know, his whole career was based on creating problems, Neil Young, you know, or it is create, because he's troublesome, isn't he?
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
And, you know, he wants to do this, he wants to make a record
playing
here.
He comes across issues, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, hats off to a manager who actually loved by his artist and didn't rip him off. So that's pretty cool, isn't it, Matt?
Actually. Crumbs. I mean, sometimes some of the people I'm meeting at the moment, it can be a bit nasty, can't they?
Well,
the music industry isn't exactly nice at times. But, you know, going on about Ragged Glory, in Rolling Stone magazine, they said it was like a monument to the spirit of garage in the pursuit of passion over precision. And they loved the album, thought it was great. And you can see that. It's that you can feel the passion in that album, can't you?
Well, as soon as I listened to it, I instantly got it because this made me smile. And his guitar again, because, I mean, as I say, we're featuring his guitar playing. It's so amazingly distorted and compressed through that little 12-watt, you know, Fender Deluxe amp that we talked about in the last show.
Yeah.
And you know, he's using, you know, his black Les Paul, and it's just... yeah. But his solos...
A metal duck.
They're so free. And you might not think he has any virtuosity as a player at all, but to me he has amazing virtuosity because he makes that guitar talk and it sounds just like Neil Young and it's perfect for that song. But he didn't write this, did he?
No. It's funny you should say that. That's lovely that you mentioned that because I wonder if we could get round to that. Yeah, it was written by... Don Sugarcane Harris and Dewey Terry, and was first recorded by them as the American R&B duo Don and Dewey in 1959. They sound like Don and Dewey. And also it was covered by The Searchers on their debut album Meet The Searchers in 63 and garage rock band The Premiers in 1964. So there's but what a great song though, because I remember, because I grew up in Herefordshire. And surrounded, my father's an agriculture engineer. I was surrounded by farming and, you know, wellies and farmers with dirty jeans, you know, and rough looking faces and ruddy because they'd been out in nature, you know. I remember my dad used to come back from work and we'd have the heating on. He'd be like, oh, it's too hot in here, you know. It was almost like because he'd been outside a lot of the time.
Yeah, of course.
So it was odd coming into, like, this artificially, you know, heated house. But anyway, I can see these characters. I grew up with these characters, especially in some of the farmers you're a bit frightened of as well.
Yeah, you know, but I mean, you are, and you know, I've been to Ross-on-Wye, which is your hometown. We've said a couple of times, there was a festival there last year at Linton.
Linton Festival,
and, you know, very close. And you came from a very privileged area. I mean, I came from like a suburb of Manchester. It wasn't particularly salubrious.
No, I had rolling fields at the back of the house.
No, you're very lucky.
Woods and bluebell dens and cows that used to kind of try and eat the flowers and put their heads over the back wall at the end of the garden. It was just really, I mean, you know, we weren't sort of a wealthy family by any stretch of the imagination, but we had love and in a good solid home, and my parents really made sure that we had a really good education.
Well, that's like, and you know, the interesting thing about this record, just going back, is that, you know, it was done at his ranch, wasn't it? Broken Arrow. And again, in the last show, if you want a little more know about that, you can hear about it because we talked about it. But the Bland basically played a set of songs twice a day for a couple of weeks, never repeating the same song in the set, then went back and listened to the best takes.
Yeah.
Which took the analysis away from it. Because I always think that if you're creating, you're much better off to do three or four takes straight off the go.
Yeah.
And then pick the best one because, you know, we record, you know, it's like Hammer Band, which is the old school way we do it. You know, we record like two or three or four takes of live rhythm section and then choose the best one.
Yeah.
You know?
The one that feels right.
Yeah, the one that feels right, even if it has slight errors in it, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, slight mistakes here and there. And similarly with guitar solos, because you know for a fact that we've got to record the first solo that I do. Generally speaking, it's the best one I do.
Well, you don't even know what you're going to play, which is quite...
I have no
idea.
That
intrigues me, actually, because I really don't know how that works, but that's you. I don't know what that is or where that comes from.
But with this record, it sounds very much like that with, you know, with Neil Young. But I think the greatest thing about that song, you know, I'm in love with your daughter. But the one with the champagne eyes. Wonderful Neil Young, Heart of Gold, from his fourth studio album, Harvest, released on the 1st of February 1972 on Reprise Records. It was also released as a single a month before the album and went to number one in Canada and the United States, number nine, the Netherlands and the UK, number 10.
Not bad, eh?
Well, that except for, especially because that kick drum sound is awful. And as an old album, I mentioned it on the last show, and it sounds like somebody's hitting a box or something. It's not like anyway. It's a masterpiece in writing, and the first time I heard this, because I never was into Neil Young, you know.
Right. Okay.
And I used to hate his voice. I despised his guitar playing. I didn't like his songs.
Hey?
Yeah, honestly. Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah. And what happened is that I used to, when I was a youngster and I was actually doing a lot of session guitar in Manchester and stuff, I used to hang out at a place called Dr. Rock, believe it or not. And it's a music shop in Bury.
All right.
And that's where I used to get all my strings from and all sorts of things. Because people used to go to shops in those days, which is cool. And the guy who was managing it, a guy called Trev Greenalch, you still know, he's on Facebook.
Yeah.
And he loved Neil Young, and he used to put it on. I said, God, I said, what a horrible whining voice he had. You know, and I went, yeah, that's heard it for a heart of gold. And I said, what are you going to do? Why are you playing with this? And I don't know what happened, but all of a sudden I just got him.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it's like really odd, because I was used to listening to these thrutching rock and rollers, you know, Ian Gillan, and Rob Plant and all this sort of stuff. And then you get Neil Young, which is a totally different thing. I just didn't know what to make of him, really.
It's interesting, that.
Yeah, well, there you are.
I wonder whether or not, I can't wonder, only you know. But it's odd, and I'd love to actually work out what happens when you decide that you like someone. Like when I didn't like Led Zeppelin, and when Rob Plant used to go down my local pub, and I used to look at him thinking he was some out-of-date suit, you know, like person. Wasn't at all impressed, and it didn't bother me. I was out to have a good night with my friends. He was an extra in my movie. And then you realise, when you connect with the music... And I don't know, I was just trying to work out when I actually got it. You know, that like boink on the head moment when you go, oh, I get it. But it's the same with you, with Neil Young. It's like, what happens? What did happen?
No idea. It's just one of those things. I think when we got together, because you were really, you used to listen to a lot of more folk and more eclectic, sort of a lot of dance music and stuff, you know?
Yeah, I did. And also, because I play a little harmonica, I used to play... the harp piece, the Heart of Gold. I used to practice to this as well. So I loved it. It was one of those things, really.
Well, it's great. It's a lovely thing. Written when he was unable to stand for long periods of time playing his electric guitar, so he returned to his acoustic.
Yeah.
So he could play sitting down. I didn't know this because he was very ill when he was a child, wasn't he?
Yeah, and also what happened, he was in town. We mentioned it in part one of the show. Mm. He was appearing on the Johnny Cash show. And he was recording at Elliot Mazer's Quadraphonic Studios. And
which we've been to, yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, so we've got, on this track, you've got Linda Ronstadt on backing vocals and James Taylor as well. So it's pretty darn cool, eh?
Yeah, you can't, you know, I mean, that's the thing about a scene, and we mentioned this all the way through our 88 shows. It's our 88th show, isn't it, that we've done?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we mentioned the fact of having a scene, and the thing about the Nashville thing is that there's a scene there and you can get groups of people together. I don't think, though, it's like it used to be. I think there's a competition element now, and there's a for want of a better word, a sort of dick waving exercise. You know, I know it's a male appendage, but I'm sort of saying it is, and everybody's trying to outdo everybody else, and they're not just getting down to it. I mean, I'm sure James Taylor actually is a really cool guy, and he looks really cool and all, Linda Ronstadt, but you can imagine him just rocking it himself. Oh, yeah, we'll do some vocals on this. I don't think that'd happen now.
Been thinking about this. I've been reading some research recently, because really the whole psychology of songwriting is really important to us and what to write about. And the thing is now people are connected, more connected, but not physically. And because like 85% of communication is non-verbal, right? So we're only using 50% of our language capability when we text and when we're actually physically not in the room.
Yeah.
So we're missing out on a whole load of communication and kind of bonding with our peers and being influenced by and inspired by people that you probably wouldn't be, but just because you're in the room with them, you go, oh my God, you're a beautiful beautiful, incredible person, or you're a pain in the ass, but you've challenged me. There's all this stuff where you're uncomfortable and you have to really develop as a person, and things that you can't just, you know, you can't just close the feed off because you're not interested in it. You know, all those life skills people are losing, and I know that, that people are suffering, the younger kids growing up are suffering, they feel lonely and a deeper sadness because they, you know, they're connected, but actually physically they're on their own in a room.
I get that.
And I think that's what we're talking about, the scene. It's like you've got to get out there and get in the room with people or get in the festival field, you know?
Yeah, well, tomorrow we're going to a jam, so we're going to be in it there tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's too dark to put the keys in my ignition. In the morning sun is yet to climb my hood ornament. But before too long I might see those flashing red lights. Look out, mama, 'cause I'm think I'll roll another number for the road. I feel able to get under any load. Though my feet aren't on the ground, I've been standing on the sound of these open-hearted for the road.
Neil Young and Roll Another Number live, originally released on his sixth studio album, Tonight's the Night, released in June 1975 on Reprise Record. And this version you've just heard is from the World Live album, and that was released in October 1991.
One of the greatest choruses in rock and roll. Think I'll Roll Another Number for the road. And how he gets in, and the sun over his hood ornament.
What? I looked at you when he said that. Yeah,
it's just a fantastic thing, you know. It's a fantastic helicopter there. Beautiful images are used in that in terms of actually invoking, you know, a feeling. And it's just great, you know. And again, in that, his guitar playing is exceptional. You know, and after the last show, you know, we had one or two emails and stuff saying, oh, it's a load of rubbish. But it's not. I don't care. He's great. And those double stops he does, where that's basically playing two notes together. And, yeah. and you can hear him ringing, and it's sloppy, but it's beautiful. And it evokes a feeling, doesn't it?
You know, yeah.
The whole song. And again, it's his mighty band behind him just sort of swaying and rocking away. And at the end, there were all that feedback, and he puts that, I think it's like a flange of phaser, I think, and it's like, beautiful, beautiful.
This is quite, there's one thing I didn't know about it, though, is that there's actually quite a sadness behind this album.
Yeah.
It's not good at all, really. And you can hear it a little bit, because it is that loose, and it is. But he's like that anyway. He's just kind of maybe more like, he's just kind of, you know, like throwing his coat down a slightly differently than normal, if you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just, you can just feel it. But he'd lost his Crazy Horse guitarist Danny Whitten, and also one of his roadies, Bruce Berry. They both died of drug overdoses a few months before he went into the studio. So he went into this makeshift sort of basement studio in America to record the album. But he was in really bad physical shape as well. He'd just done a 90-day tour to support, that was a Time Fades Away tour, and it was disastrous, really, because he just had this huge success with Harvest. They booked him on all these gig dates. The band weren't getting on, and he decided then, instead of playing all the hits that the audience wanted, he was playing new stuff they've never heard before. So he was kind of, and he said, I had this all-star band that wouldn't even look each other in the eye. So he was just, and he was basically drinking heavily, and he'd been doing all these dates, so his voice was wrecked, and he was just in a really bad state. And his dad, called Scott, once described the album as a man on a binge at a wake, but that didn't even do it justice.
Yeah.
Soldiers and Nixon coming. We're finally on our own. Soldiers and Nixon's coming. We're finally on our own. This summer I hear the drumming. Forget in Ohio. 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 I'm an import. Forget in Ohio. Forget in Ohio.
Crosby, Stills, Nash, and occasionally Young, Ohio. First released as a single in June 1970 on the Atlantic record label. It peaked 14 in the US Billboard Hot 100 charts, went to number 16 in Canada. And the incredible thing is, was it David Crosby who said that so leaving Nixon's name in there was the bravest thing he'd ever seen? Because even now, you do not criticise the president or the White House.
No, and you definitely don't sing about impeaching the president.
For lying. Yeah. And which, of course, was much later in his career, which was brilliant. And,
of course.
And it's not, I think the thing is, we're not particularly, you know, we're not anti-establishment per se, although, you know, I'm personally an anarchist, and an anarchist is not actually what, you'd look it up anyway, you can look what my political persuasions are for being an anarchist, but it's not actually what you think. I'm not totally against the system. What I'm interested in personal responsibility and more into small areas of government, so like
more localized,
much more localized, where people, you know, look after themselves, and the government is done locally rather than a big, you know, super state above it. So, but anyway, that's as an aside. This is about the tragedy of those four students being killed.
Kent State,
Kent State, and you know, a lot of people have said it was one of the greatest protest songs ever done. But, you know, it's framed by that beautiful lick. Diggy diggy bunk dee. It really great little lick. Great solo. Marvellous vocals, of course. Because when those four actually start singing together, there's a magic there, isn't there? You know, Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young.
And it was actually, I think they wrote it, well, when Neil saw the photos of the Kent State shootings in Life magazine, it was on like the 4th of May in 1970, when that was when the National Guardsman shot and killed the four students. And they wrote this straight away, and Atlantic actually rush released it. They went into the studio, did it in a couple of takes, and it was out because within a couple of weeks, because they knew it was an important, so important to get that song out there. And they knew it was time sensitive. So, and I think that they then were adopted really by the sort of protest movement, and it's like the American counterculture. And it is a bit sad as well, because it's like the revolution that never came. Mm. You know, they had so much hope, and you know, and you can see that repeated today in terms of ideological hope, where really the practicalities that people have the dream, but really in reality it's like, well, how do you apply that?
Having said that, that, you know, that young Scandinavian girl or woman who was basically single-handedly taking climate change and put it,
I read about
right
it this morning,
the
actually,
very top of the world agenda is amazing. And that would not be possible without the internet and the freedom of the internet, and something that we've got to defend to the hilt, the freedom of the internet. Total freedom, no censorship, you know. And I know that you know, there's bad things on there and some very good things on there, and there's a lot of indifferent things on there. But, you know, as a concept, as an idea of actual intellectual freedom throughout the world, that, you know, Plato would have actually, you know, and all the old philosophers would have been going, wow, this is amazing, you know.
And it's also, it's like, who decides what's right learning and what's not right learning? It's like there's a certain system, and I've watched documentaries about this. You know, even our academic system is to teach to think a certain way, and it should really be about freedom of thought and exploring different ways of seeing the world and different ideas of understanding. I mean, you've got like the Joe Rogan podcast, and apparently that's termed as being on the dark web. And it's like, why is it dark? It's actually very informative, and it really inspires me. Some of the guests he's had on there, when I've been listening to his podcast, Michael Pollan, who is a Harvard University lecturer, who's just written a book about psychedelics and going into the history of that and going into the research and how actually in mental health institutions, it actually could help people.
Yeah.
When there's been no innovation since serotonin reuptake inhibitors, which is basically the antidepressant drugs, there's been no step forward in mental health help since that point, 20 odd years ago. And so this is really, really important. But why do they call it dark? Who tells me and you and everybody that it's dark, like dark tourism, dark web, dark? Why is it dark?
Well, going back to Neil Young, I think he really, because, I mean, he's a huge campaigner about everything, isn't he? You put Monsanto, you know, anything that, you know, the Native American, the subjugation, basically.
Exactly,
the exploitation of the American, the Native Americans and all this. He's a great guy, Neil Young, and a massive pain in the ass. But what a massively talented dude, lyrically, vocally, arrangements, guitar playing, you know, and how he's dynamized music for this, 50 years.
Just like children sleeping, we could dream this night away. But there's a full moon rising, let's go dance. Ooh.
Neil Young and Harvest Moon, the title track from his 19th studio album, Harvest Moon. First released in November 92 on Reprise Records. Went to number 34 in the UK singles charts, and this version is from his Unplugged album.
Well, I love his live stuff. That's why we play so much of the live stuff on the show.
Know, it's great.
These two shows are great.
And do you know when he plays his acoustic set, he used to go out on stage without a set list. He would just go with the flow and, you know, and just play what felt was right. How incredible is that?
That's fantastic, you know. And it's, you know, it's just amazing. But what he said, talking about his life, really, he says, when you're young, you don't have any experience. You're charged up, but you're out of control. If you're old and you're not charged up, then all you have is memories. But if you're charged and stimulated by what's going on around you and also have the experience, you know what to appreciate and how to pass and what to pass by. And then you're really cruising. What a great thing to say.
Yes, I need that city life. It sure has lots of style, but pretty soon it wears me out, and I have to think to smile. I'm thankful for my country home. It gives me peace of mind. Somewhere I can walk alone and leave myself behind.
somewhere I can walk alone and leave myself behind.
And it finishes. Neil Young and Crazy Horse, Country Home, the opening track from his 18th studio album, Ragged Glory, which is also his sixth album with Crazy Horse. I love those guys. It's such a plodding groove. You go and see Neil Young live, and that's all you get all night, but it's great. And that one of those great extended guitar solos he does. Yeah. But you can hear him thinking all the way through it, and he changes pickups, and all of a sudden he comes up with that beautiful harmonic, bleeding, oh, gorgeous, just beautiful stuff, you know.
I like them for their simplicity as well, because sometimes it's about the groove, you know. It doesn't have to be virtuoso. That's what I really love. So I wish people would just, you know, ease up on trying to do like 50,000 notes a second. Well, music isn't just about that.
That's got a great chorus. Thank you for my country home. Gives me peace of mind. It's great. It's lovely like harmonies.
Potatoes and patches as well. Quite like that.
You know, I mean, these two shows, though, we've been trying to feature really his guitar playing and stuff. And there's, I mean, some of the albums I absolutely love. Freedom, of course, Regular, we've heard. Harvest Moon. Sleeps with Angels. Mirrorball. Silver and Gold. You know, these are albums that I've absolutely adored, you know. And we haven't played stuff from a lot of these.
No, I'm going to miss them, actually. I think we should do some more.
Yeah, well, I think we will over the next, you know, few weeks in our normal shows, when regular service resumes, if it does for a bit.
Yeah, indeed. Well, we've talked about Ragged Glory, but I've just literally read a great story, right, about Graham Nash. He rocks up at Broken Arrow Ranch, yeah, to see Neil.
Yeah.
And this is like around when Harvest was just recorded. And he said, hey, do you want to hear something? He goes, yeah, sure. Don't mind that, Neil. Should we go into the studio? No. Get in the boat. Get in the rowing boat. So he takes Graham Nash out to the middle of his lake, right? He thinks, right, he's going to play him on his tune on this little cassette Walkman. And the next thing, Harvest comes playing out of these massive loudspeakers. He had his whole house on the left as one speaker and his barn on the right as the right speaker. And he said it was louder than hell. And he suddenly heard Harvest in stereo because his house and his barn were both massive speakers in the middle of the lake.
Wow.
And Elliot Mazer, who produced the album, comes running down to the shore, right? And he shouts out, "How's that, Neil?" And Neil shouts back, "More barn!"
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear.
There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street, singing songs and a carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Buffalo Springfield, and For What It's Worth, and that was released as a single on Atco Records on the 23rd of December in 1966, where it peaked at number 7 in the Billboard Hot 100 charts and was later added to the March 67 second pressing of their first album, Buffalo Springfield.
Written by Stephen Stills about the Sunset Strip curfew riots in 66.
Yeah, it was basically, yeah, Buffalo Springfield were the house band at Whiskey A Go Go. And what's happening is that there was some traffic congestion at night with all the guys going out and girls going out to the bars. And so they tried to put a curfew on.
Wow.
How weird is that? And then it was just riots.
Yeah. Well, it's a great song, you know. I love Neil Young's harmonics in that, because that was like one of the first times you really heard that, you know. Yeah. But we're nearly at the end of the show now.
And, I know.
It's been exciting because today in Germany, where our new studio is, it's been about 35 degrees. It's been very hot. We're having a heat wave here, which is, of course, nothing to do with global warming, nothing to do at all.
No, of course not.
And, you know, we've got a new console coming next week, so we'll be able to start recording the album, which is fantastic.
And I loved it, you know, because finally we were able to sit outside again, and we just had a jam, didn't we, the other night? We bought the wine and we wrote three songs, and just whether or not we use them, it's just nice to be creative again and to feel alive. And we're just settling, aren't we? And loving each other. It's beautiful. I'm really happy right now.
And we're just going through we're just going through all the stuff that we've been listening to and recorded, little clips and stuff over the past 2 years since we did the last album, getting all that together. And so it's great.
And thanks for joining us on the podcast, you know. We really love music. It's our life. And please share with your friends, you know, because we just love it. And it's like, it's our weekly date, isn't it?
It is, and we do, yeah. And,
it's good to have good conversation, though. Just intelligent, stimulating conversation.
It's great. So anyway, we're going to play out with A Piece of Crap by Neil Young.
Yeah, I know. I love it. I think it's what a brilliant song. What a great title. And it's from his 20th studio album, Sleeps with Angels.
Trying to save the trees, bought a plastic bag. The bottom fell out. It was a piece of crap.